KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
KUOWmedicine.org.
I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 9:04, joined now by the two and only Steve Scher and Marcy Silman.
The two
joined
only.
Now, the two and only.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
Good morning.
They need two of us to get through a particular day. All right, it is day one of the Spring Pledge Drive.
Woo-hoo.
We come to you two times a year and remind you that public radio exists because you help pay for it. Many people have paid in the past. Now I ask you to pay. And how you do it? You call 206-543-9595. You call 1-866-677-5869. You pledge online at KUOW.org. We're all in this together.
We are indeed. Coming up, our own Deb Wong will be talking about development plans for South Lake Union, Tower Heights setbacks, all the many things that are policy discussions. Deb has been following this for a while, bringing it to you in a little bit different format than the usual news story style. Gives you a little bit more in depth. We're also going to hear from Al Gore. So Deb Wong and Al Gore, what more could you
what
want
more
from
could you
an hour?
Ask for?
I don't know. 206-543-9595. Steve, Marjorie says, I couldn't drive anywhere without KUOW. I turn on my car, turn on the radio, and when I reach my destination, I can't leave the car. You know that that's true for you. You listen to Weekday, you get caught up in an interview, and you're maybe a little bit late for an appointment, but it's okay. That's why we're here. We're here to sort of bring you the why behind the world, and we're asking you to put a dollar value on that.
KUOW, we make you late. 206-543-9595. Pledge $250 for a whole year's worth of public radio. You can pledge $150. Pledge what is meaningful and affordable to you, but pledge because we need your support. 206-543-9595.
In fact, Steve, we are charged with raising $11,000 by 11 a.m., and we get there one, say, $120 pledge at a time. That's 10 bucks a month. You can become an Evergreen member. Maybe you have been listening to Weekday and have never called. We'd love you to be a new member.
Maybe $5,500 an hour is your wage.
And wow.
you could just pledge that. No,
you could.
Of course not.
No.
We do it together.
It doesn't work that way.
We all work together to keep this institution going. You get coverage you can trust. You know the day in, day out, you're going to hear good stories, good interviews, information that you need. You know, between this pledge drive and the next pledge drive, I'm going to be gone. You're going to be here.
I'm going to be here.
The whole team of producers that put Weekday together is going to be here. It's going to be the same quality you come to expect day in and day out. That's because of all the people who have committed themselves in the past. Now we ask you to commit yourself now.
Anne called from Queen Anne, who just doubled her monthly gift. She's an Evergreen member, which means she makes a pledge and it's just goes on her credit card every month and she doesn't have to think about it. You can do that too, but you can't do it just by wishing and hoping and thinking and praying. You need to do it by calling 206-543-9595, toll free 1-866-677-5869, or you can pledge online at KUOW.org. But and frankly, I really love it when the phones ring.
We like the phones to ring. That was pretty clever slipping in that lyric there.
I'm not going to sing it though.
No,
not.
And you
sing.
Know, I got married in a fever, hotter than a pepper sprout. I ask you to pledge in a fever, hotter than a pepper sprout. 206-543-9595, 1-866-677.
Do it.
5869. We look forward to hearing from you.
KUOW would like to acknowledge the volunteers from ARNP's United of Washington who are answering phones this morning in the pledge room. Thank you for supporting KUOW.
52 degrees in Seattle under a mostly cloudy sky. Should be mostly sunny this afternoon, and we're expected to hit 63.
Support for KUOW comes from Rick Steves Europe, presenting a day of travel classes at the Europe Through the Back Door Travel Festival, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. in downtown Edmonds, Saturday, April 6th. Learn more at ricksteves.com.
The best way of making those investments really successful and yield fantastic results is to activate them with people. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's all about people.
The internet culture is growing. It is empowering individuals to connect with one another. Business models are being disrupted. Cultural and societal models are being disrupted. We need to become much more precise and inclusive in deciding what kind of future we want to create.
Al Gore, the Al Gore, talking about the future. He'll be talking to us through the magic radio in a few moments. You also heard Vulcan's Ada Healy talking about the South Lake Union neighborhood. One of the great things about living in the Northwest, living in Seattle in particular, is the amazing views that pop up. You hit a rise, and all of a sudden, there's the mountains. You turn around, you see the city before you. Places like South Lake Union, right in the middle of town, you can turn and see the Space Needle, downtown, Green Lake, Gasworks. Across the way, you're really good. You can see Green Lake. You'd have to rise up a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but that neighborhood's changing, right? And the city that values its views may see some of those views diminished in return for density and economic growth. Deb Wong has been covering what's been happening in South Lake Union, and because this plan for South Lake Union is going to be discussed in the city council today, she joins us to help explain what's at stake. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
So, first off, describe the area we're talking about.
Okay. Well, the area is South Lake Union as a whole, which goes from kind of north of downtown up to Lake Union. But the most contentious part of this whole plan is three blocks that are right on the southern edge of Lake Union.
These are the three blocks that are now devoid of – they were construction landing areas. They had buildings there. They're knocked down. And between Mercer and Valley, the newly constituted Mercer.
That's
these
right.
These are the blocks that are rubble.
They're rubble. And if you get off I-5, if you've ever gone to Seattle Center, you drive right by them. In the old days, I guess there were gas stations. There was a big pornography shop, apparently.
Really?
Oh, apparently. That's
what I've
been told.
I must have missed that one.
And warehouses. But now they're pretty much empty. And they're mostly owned by Vulcan, which is Paul Allen's company.
Part of the legacy of when they were trying to build the Commons Park, and Vulcan came in as the benefactor and bought up lots of land.
That's right. And this is, you could argue, is probably the most valuable piece of the land that they have.
Because it's right there.
It's right on the lake.
So what does Vulcan want to do there?
Well, so Vulcan has presided over this entire transformation of South Lake Union. And they've built the Amazon campus. They've put in a hotel. There's lots of new restaurants. I mean, they've really transformed this whole neighborhood. But that development has not reached the lake yet. As you said, there's been a lot of transportation improvements going on right along the lake. They want to bring basically that development down to the lake. And part of that would be building a lot of retail along one end of the strip, and along the other end of the strip, they would build three 24-floor-high towers, residential towers. And Ada Healy says, Ada Healy is the vice president for real estate at Vulcan. She says the whole idea is to activate the waterfront.
We as a community have invested a lot of money in Lake Union Park. A lot of money has been invested in Mohai. And the best way of making those investments really successful and yield fantastic results is to activate them with people. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's all about people.
Yeah, getting people on the streets, getting people to use the shops, you know, getting people to use the park and the new museum down there.
Now, I remember the different diagrams we have seen over the years. Valley was going to be a narrower street. There would be these crosswalks that would be clear for people to cross from the buildings over to, and back and forth across Valley to the park, making that whole sort of like a downtown zone, a pedestrian zone, though, of course, cars will be there, too. But the contention is these towers. What's the landscape? How big a change would that be to the landscape?
Well, I mean, right now, this was, as you remember, an old warehouse zone. So the zoning currently calls for buildings that are anywhere from 4 to 8 stories high. So we're talking about 24 stories at the lake. So it's a tripling or a quadrupling of what exists today.
What we have now are big boxy blocks,
right,
of almost the whole block at 4 stories or 8 in some places. But they're mostly like 4 to 6, right?
Right. And so the idea is this wouldn't be like giant, you know, towers that take up the entire block. The developers would be allowed to build kind of a podium that reaches, you know, almost the heights that exist today. But then above that, there would be these tall, skinny towers, and they would really have to be skinny. There would be, you know, development requirements saying they can't be wider than a certain width.
Is there any skinny tower in our city that is comparable, or do we have to go to Vancouver, for example, to see something like this?
I think they're based on Vancouver. I mean, they're based on the idea that you
You want to preserve views through these towers. You want people to be able to see through the towers, and you want to preserve light that comes down onto the street. So that was originally the idea.
So 24 stories would be tripling or quadrupling the heights. Why 24?
Okay, so there was this giant public process that went on for years and years, apparently, and it brought together businesses and residents and the city, and they said, let's figure out what's an appropriate height for this neighborhood. And the city basically said, we're going to go with 16. Volk had wanted 30. Others wanted 16. I'm sorry, 24. And so the city said, let's go right in the middle, 24.
I see. So some people want 16, some people want 30. So in the middle, 24.
Is
that what's going to happen?
No, well, we don't know yet, because there's been sort of a public outcry among some of the neighbors who feel that 24 stories is really overkill. And here we heard from a woman named Christine Lee. She lives in the Cascade neighborhood, and she's an sort of a critic of this plan, but here's what she has to say.
I think that when you have Mohai right at the lake that represents our history and our industry, and then juxtaposed to that, you're tilting your head up at 240 feet, luxury towers, I find that a little incongruent with our neighborhood, our history, our just the general spirit of where we live.
And there's also this idea that we've heard about lately about stepping down to the lake. Apparently, Peter Steinbrück, who is a former city council member who's now running for mayor, has raised this issue that for a long time in the city, the idea is that we build down towards the lake. As we get closer to the lake, buildings get shorter so that people can still see and their views can be preserved. So this would not be a stepping down to the lake. This would be more like a stepping up to the lake.
So there is a... There's no real contention with the other end of the neighborhood. People, they want to build tall up there.
Yeah, they're towards
downtown. So the city council is considering this shaving off 8 stories. There's a lot of lobbying going on.
There's a lot of lobbying going on. And we were trying to figure out how much this might be worth to Vulcan's bottom line.
Right.
Vulcan really, you know, wants this 24 stories. They won't say, you know, they don't want to talk about how much profit they're going to make on this area, which, you know, makes sense. It's not really seemly to talk about that during a public process. But we asked a fellow named Tim Ellis, who's an analyst at Redfin, and he crunched some numbers based on condo properties that have recently gone on the market in downtown Seattle. And this is what he had to say.
The sale value of, you know, another 8 floors could be anywhere between $40, $50 million easily. And so, you know, depending on their profit margins, you know, you're talking about 10 to $12 million that they would be missing out on.
Hmm. Yeah, and this is 3 towers. So based on his calculation, we're talking about $160 to $200 million worth of property.
So, Deb Wong, this is a fight about how tall is tall, how tall things should be. But there's more to it than this.
Well, I think it's how dense the city wants to be, how much the city wants to grow. And throughout this whole public process, what's become clear to me is that there seems to be a momentum in the city to build more, to build denser. It sort of makes a lot of sense from the city's point of view. It makes a lot of sense in terms of transit and global warming. You know, you don't want people like driving to all over the place to get to work. You want them kind of concentrated in the city. It's, you know, bus services here. It makes a lot of sense for a lot of different people. Oh, plus social services. They get money when developers build higher. They actually take benefits from that. But there's also, you know, the sense of what is it that makes Seattle special? And there's a kind of, human scale here that a lot of people want to preserve as well. So it's a battle between those two things, I think.
It's a very interesting story. I love following it because it's so interesting. And I love that you know so much about it, because that makes it so much easier to figure it out for all of us, right?
Well, thanks.
Thank you. See there, you know, we've been doing more of these reporter two-ways, right?
Marcy yeah, Selman love them. I love
and
them.
Deb Wong, right? And they're great to be able to do these two-ways because reporters have a lot of expertise and they can come in and make our world a little more clear.
I think it's something that you're going to hear more and more on KUOW as we integrate the talk shows and our news effort. It's all trying to serve you up to bring you, the listener, what you tune to 94.9 FM for. And today, me and Steve and I, are asking you to help pay for it with your call to 206-543-9595 or 1-866-677-5869. We've raised about $1,800 towards our $11,000 goal. We're going to We're going to throw something in the pot right now.
What are we throwing in? The future?
We're throwing the future into the pot. We have 10 copies of The Future by former Vice President and number one New York Times best-selling author Al Gore. We're going to hear excerpts from the interview that you did with Al Gore in just a second. If you want to pledge at the $150 level today, you can be one of the first 10 people to take away a copy of this book, 206-543-9595. $150 pledge, copy of Al Gore's book, autographed.
Autographed.
Autographed by Al Gore.
We put him to work when he was here. I think we had him sign a bunch of labels so we could put it in the book.
Is that what it was?
I think so. They may have been the book, may have been the labels.
Well,
we put him to work. He said, Al, you know, you got to do this. And he was up for it. He said, oh, this is for Pledge Drive. I'm there.
I was so excited to meet Al Gore and to, you know, just the great respect I have for him. Maybe you have that too and you want to get a copy of this book, The Future, and support Weekday, the show where you heard him interviewed. Now is the time, folks. We have only 9 more copies of that book at the $150 level, 206-543-9595.
Don't delay. We want to hear from you. Call while you're listening to this. Get this book at $150 pledge. It's only 10. This is why you support KUOW for conversations like this. Al Gore came to Seattle to talk about the future, 6 drivers of global change. He takes an in-depth look at some of the major shifts he sees happening in the world. Globalization linked to automation, worldwide digital connections that are shaping a world where there's fewer workers needed. While we have population growth, new biological breakthroughs to help us live longer. So how does that all make us see the future? What's the world going to be like? We covered a lot of ground in that conversation. And we started talking about what that means to have a changing labor economy and where automation is going to have an impact on people.
Since the early part of the 20th century, really in the 1920s, we have had a consumer demand-driven economy. And indeed, the role of advertising and the manufacturing of wants is now central to the operations of the economy. At the same time, the middle class has been earning wages and salaries at a level that empowers them to go to the stores and buy goods and services, keep the pump primed, and fuel this virtuous circle of a demand-driven economy. But the middle class has been hollowed out. It's shrinking. And part of the reason is the combination of outsourcing and robo-sourcing.
You should describe that, robo-sourcing. Define it.
Well, advanced automation is different from what the Luddites worried about hundreds of years ago, because now what's being extended and magnified is not just our physical capacities to work, but our cognitive functions. One quick example to illustrate it. Some law firms are now using a new algorithm that empowers one first-year lawyer to do as much legal research as used to require 500 first-year lawyers.
500.
And the number of mistakes in that research falls way, way down. Now, those other 499 lawyers, we would think in the past, are going to find jobs in these new emergent fields that are being created by the new technology itself. And that's no longer clear. We have lots of work to do, but much of what needs to be done and compensated for today is in the category of public goods. We need more mental health care. We need environmental remediation. We need much more intelligent and more investment in public education, etc. And we have had an ideological hegemon that has driven us to pull functions from the public sector into private markets, but this at a time when the income flows for middle-class Americans is shrinking. And by the way, this is true not only in the U.S. and Europe and Japan, but also in China and India and other developing and emerging economies. Foxconn in China that makes so many of the smartphones just announced that it's installing over the next 3 years 1 million new robots. So these rural Chinese men and women that came to the Guangzhou area and other manufacturing centers are now going to have to compete with these intelligent machines.
Isn't that even what's happening with Apple? Apple announced they're going to manufacture back here, but aren't they doing robots?
Yes, that's right. Now, the half-full part of that glass is we are seeing here in the U.S. manufacturing jobs coming back. The half-empty side of that glass is that there are not nearly as many jobs associated with it. You walk into these factories now, and you don't see very many people. It's just a constant low hum of all these robots and machines.
Well, do we have the jobs of making robots, or are robots going to be making robots as well?
They will be, in fact.
Al Gore is author of The Future, Six Drivers of Global Change, former vice president, won an Academy Award for An Inconvenient Truth, has been very successful in high-tech and communications investments, does long-term investments with his company. That's why it seems that there is a dystopian future before us, which is a future that has many millions of people without means and a few millions of, or even billions of people who have what they need through this system.
It doesn't have to be a dystopian. We still have not only free will, but the powers of free people to make decisions and implement them through our self-government. But we need to restore the functioning of our government. Our democracy has been hacked just at the time when we are confronting these incredibly difficult and challenging decisions. So, as I said before, there is no shortage of work that needs to be done, but building the new models for compensating people to do the things that are absolutely essential now, that is a challenge.
What does it look like to you, that new model? And how is the money, or the wealth, let's call it, that is going to a smaller and smaller group of elites, how does that money be let go of in a way that everybody would accept? I mean, we're all in it together, responsibility, but what's the model? What's the lever that makes it happen?
Well, I don't think there's a single silver bullet. I think there's some silver buckshot, lots of different solutions, like co-op models. I think also we're seeing a return to a more local-centric economy, where people are trying to source materials, food, crafts in the areas in which they live. We have some mind-blowing new technologies like 3D printing, which is likely to have an impact on manufacturing that is comparable to what mass production and interchangeable parts had in the early part of the 20th century. And this model is also a local-centric model. We are also going to have to, in my opinion, we're going to have to change the way we measure progress, the way we define growth, the way we include in our calculations the things positive and negative that we now call externalities. Pollution is a negative externality. The benefits of education and investments in music and art and culture and science and R&D are positive externalities. We need to become much more precise and inclusive in deciding what kind of future we want to create.
But what gets us there? Well, I understand there's not one, but there have to be. I mean, I see you write about it in the book, education, health models, internet and democracy. These are all things we need to reform or rework. But what are the, you know, we are up against an idea that opposes that, that doesn't see that as the model at all.
Yeah, I think it's beginning to give way. I don't want to fall back on the old cliche, it's always darkest before the dawn. But I think that it's significant that the recent polls show an historic reversal for the first time in many decades in attitudes about what the size and functions of government should be. We need to reform government. But we need to use the empowering technology of the internet, the global mind, if you will, to make much better decisions. Right now, elites are in control to an unhealthy degree, in part because money has enabled the wealthy and powerful to hack democracy and to make it operate in ways that our founders did not intend. But the internet is already beginning to change this. Young people are more active in their communities than any previous generation, partly because of the internet. Individual bloggers now affect the course of important debates. And while the television age, which is a centralizing, suffocating force where democracy is concerned, the internet, the television age is still dominant, that will not last for much longer. The internet culture is growing. It is empowering individuals to connect with one another. Business models are being disrupted. Cultural and societal models are being disrupted. And in the main, what is replacing these old models are more efficient, more humane, more precise, and more productive new models.
So where do you see that? Where do you see the replacement that are more humane? Do you have any examples? You can start with healthcare if you want.
Yeah, we're seeing the leading edge of a revolution in healthcare called precision medicine. We're seeing what one author called the creative destruction of American medicine. And it comes with a combination of the global mind and all of these digitally connected devices that don't just allow us to communicate with our doctors, but allow our hearts and blood vessels and vital functions to report data securely to machines that the doctor is consulting. And that's one element. The other element is the decoding of the human genome, the microbiome, the assembly of an increasing volume of highly relevant, highly valuable medical information about each individual. We have had a model in healthcare that is the classic one-size-fits-all, broad-spectrum antibiotics, medicines that are tested on massive populations, and actually some people benefit and some people don't. But it's now increasingly possible to develop pharmaceuticals and procedures and therapies that are targeted and tailored precisely to the individuals that will benefit from the new approach.
Al Gore is author of The Future, Six Drivers of a Global Change. All right, so let me shift to democracy and media, and let's go into the murky waters of it's hard to be a saint in the city, is what I was talking about with the boss there. Now, Current and Al Jazeera, I've heard all the explanations people get raised and the criticism you got and your responses, understanding the criticism. What I want to know is your thinking about this.
Sure.
Current, was how many outlets were there for Current? Where was Current carried on? How many cable channels?
We had
about
50 million homes, and we ended up with about, in the transaction, one of the distributors canceled out. So we transferred to Al Jazeera 40 million homes.
All right, so you must have weighed the cost-benefit analysis of making this choice, knowing you're going to be hit with criticism of bringing in the oil sheikdom and being hit with hypocrisy. Did you think that you were offering a disruptive lever by bringing Al Jazeera into America?
Absolutely. And yes, I knew full well that I'd be answering questions about this. I had a book tour coming up. I knew full well and that there would be criticism. But after doing diligence on the network itself, Al Jazeera English was named Network of the Year in the United Kingdom last year. Hillary Clinton said it's part of the solution, not part of the problem. They have real news, not like our networks. I'm quoting, semi-quoting her, and a lot of other people say the same thing. It's won all these major awards, and more importantly than that, it has based its future on maintaining and building a reputation for objectivity and integrity. Now, here in the U.S., our television news environment has been degraded continually over time. You know the example of last year, 2012, the hottest year, Superstorm Sandy, 60% of the country in drought, $110 billion of climate-related disaster damage, West Nile virus, biggest outbreak ever, all the fires in the West, and not one single journalist asked a single candidate any questions in any of the debates about climate. That's pathetic. And it's also emblematic of how we get local crime news basically scaled up for national consumption, because if it bleeds, it leads. You know, the old, if it thinks, it stinks. The old meme in television news. And the line between news and entertainment has been so blurred that, I mean, I turned on a national morning news show the other morning looking for news about something that had happened that I was really interested in. And they had a long story on some poor guy who's been hiccuping for 65 weeks. And it was interesting. It was really interesting. You know, he has trouble getting a date, but it's, you know, it's just taken over.
But we have choices. Al Jazeera, I could still read Al Jazeera, and I could even watch Al Jazeera through the global mind.
Well, and those who have watched Al Jazeera English on the internet come away generally raving about it. But as a practical matter, television, satellite and cable television are still completely dominant. And so now people will have another choice, more diversity, a 24/7 intelligent, committed news gathering channel that has an international news. Remember that? We used to get it. And climate news. They do an outstanding job of reporting climate. Nobody else does here in the U.S. So I think it can be a very positive addition to the television dial. But hey, people can judge for themselves. It'll be on shortly.
All right. Well, so you're getting grief. You can make money on this, but you didn't have to do this to make money. You have money anyways.
Yeah.
You have some money.
And they're going to keep most of our employees, too. And that was also a factor.
What impact do they have on Fox News, on CNN, on NBC? I mean, what do you really think they do?
My hope is that they will raise the level of professionalism and commitment to news gathering. I mentioned before that line between news and entertainment has been blurred. Look at this thing. So last night on CNN, they have this. They have the logo 9 Days of Terror with the rogue cop down in L.A. And it's one hell of a story. Hell yes, it's news, but its own logo and its own, you know, it's just we get these serial obsessions that just take over, and then so the charred body. They have an interest in people tuning in to keep that serial obsession going.
But what does that do to the voter? Do you really think it
deprives
us?
The voter of a serious exploration of the kinds of subjects I write about in this book, the kinds of choices that we as a free people need to make. If we're watching the continued, the 11th week of a search for a missing young woman in Aruba, I'm not saying it's not news. It is news. But if that crowds out any discussion of the fact that we're destroying the future of human civilization by putting 90 million tons of global warming pollution into the atmosphere as if it's a sewer every single day, that's not a good result.
Former Vice President Al Gore, media mogul, media critic, author of the book The Future, 6 Drivers of Global Change, which we offered to you at $150 value during our pledge drive, and you took us up on that, getting us closer to our goal. But now we need to hear from you. Al Gore, media critic, I know. One place he says, news is being done right. News is being done with the proper values.
Public radio?
Public radio.
We are turning to you. I'm Marcy Silman with Steve Sherry. You listen to Weekday. We're asking you to help pay for it with your call right now to 206-543-9595. The conversation with Al Gore continues coming up in the next hour. We're going to talk about books that inspire you to action. Maybe The Future by Al Gore is one of those types of books. Maybe you are thinking, Steve and I were jotting down the number of presidential candidates that have come through the Weekday studio. studios over the years. Ralph Nader's been here.
John McCain.
John Kerry. Barack Obama was here. You spoke with him. If you value these conversations with people who really have the power to change your daily life, we're asking you to help pay for it. Toll-free, 866-677-5869. We have an $11,000 goal, Steve, and we're just about at $3,800.
You know that this is coverage you can trust. You know that it's you can trust and verify, and if you don't like what you hear, you can give us feedback. You can call in these folks and talk to them when they're on the air, from the mayor to the county exec. We are looking for you to help support this public radio service. Nancy Pearl is going to be here to talk about that book that moved you to action, or maybe a book you might memorize. We'll kick that around in an hour. Right now, we are kicking around the idea that you need to help pay for this service by calling 206-543-9595. Do it right now. Do not delay.
We want to hear from you. Luke called from Tacoma. He's currently unemployed, but public radio is a priority, and he's challenging everyone to contribute. Michelle from Seattle says, check if your company matches your donation. Her $100 pledge becomes $400 because of her employee match. Folks like the 3M Foundation, Abbott Labs, Aetna, AT&T, Boeing, Eli Lilly, Expedia, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, just some of the many companies that will match your charitable contributions. And a pledge to KUOW, nonprofit public radio, is one of those kinds of donations.
You know, I want to go back to that notion of media and what's good, what is covered. Everything's news, but what's the balance? Public radio from NPR, PRI, KUOW, weekday, the conversation. Fair. People try to be fair and bring you many voices. I've heard some criticism saying, why am I hearing all these stories about the Republicans? Why are they talking so much about the right wing? Why are we going into the CPAC convention? Because our job is to bring many voices to the air. You know, the whole re-report, you decide thing. Well, we are doing that. That's what public radio does.
Well, you know, we always talk about this, and sometimes it feels like a cliche, Stephen. We trot out, you know, you want to be a member of an informed democracy. You want you, not just you when you're making a decision, but all your fellow citizens to really know what goes into a vote, what goes into a policy decision, what goes into a law, what goes into a Supreme Court decision. Last week's coverage of the Supreme Court deliberations on same-sex marriage had you listening and had you really glued to the radio. We're asking you to pay for it, 543-9595.
Well, you know, and that's why we're asking you to pay for it, because we know that your gift to KUOW, your intention isn't just to pay for your aspect of listening. It's to keep the institution going so that you know, for all the people who are perhaps not paying for it and may not be informed, you can say to them, you know, you ought to take a little listen to 94.9 FM and hear what how they're covering it. Maybe you'll learn something. Maybe you don't want to say it that way. Find a nice way to say
that's
it.
That's a little harsh, but you want to invite
hey, people. Maybe you'll learn something, pal.
Yeah, no.
that's going to be our new logo.
You've come up with at least three this hour so far. Our goal, $11,000 by 11 a.m. We're not quite halfway there, but I know that we will make this goal because you have been waiting for the right time to call. We're going to go back to Steve's conversation with Al Gore in just 43 seconds and counting. Go to the phone.
No, he's going to take a break, too.
And he's going to breathe. 1-866-677-5869. Think about all the news, all the information, all the stimulating conversation, all the thought-provoking topics that you've heard on this show, and make that pledge. Now is the time. 543-9595.
KUOW 94.9 Seattle. Listen. Maybe you'll learn something, Tal. That's going to be the logo that we distribute.
I promise if you pledge, it won't be. 543-9595.
Give us a call. Don't wait. We want to hear from you right now. 206-543-9595. You help keep this institution alive with your dollars. That's how simple and how important it is. Thanks.
Support for KUOW comes from Group Health Cooperative. 65 years ago, Group Health integrated health care and health care coverage with one goal, better health for everyone. Information at ghc.org/one goal.
Steve's conversation with Al Gore continues in just a moment here, but why not give a call right now, 206-543-9595. Make a pledge of support to KUOW. Thanks for that, 206-543-9595.
KUOW would like to acknowledge the businesses that have donated food and beverages throughout our pledge drive, especially Stumptown Coffee Roasters, Top Pot Donuts, and the Bagel Deli. Thank you for supporting KUOW.
52 degrees in Seattle and mostly cloudy. All that should change later. We're expecting lots of sun and a high of 63.
Support for KUOW comes from the Seattle Art Museum, presenting Rembrandt van Dyck Gainsborough, The Treasures of Kenwood House, London, featuring a collection of European masterpieces. Museum open Tuesday through Sunday. Tickets and information at seattleartmuseum.org.
By the way, the entire conversation with Al Gore is online at KUOW.org. One more reason to support this public radio service, because online all the time, that's been paid for by lots of people. You should help pay for it as well if you can. Al Gore was here talking about his book, The Future. We talked about fracking. We talked about Citizens United and its effect on politics. We shifted talking a little more about the environment in this part of the conversation. And we talked about how there was going to be a policy to reduce greenhouse gas in this country and greenhouse gas emissions, and maybe it would start with a carbon tax.
If there was a carbon tax or an indirect price on carbon through cap and trade, you would see economic forces driving much higher levels of efficiency in every form of transportation and in every walk of life. Earth Inc. now relies on carbon-based fuels for 85% of the energy that's used in the world every day. At the same time, the Earth gets more energy from the sun in 1 hour than is required to fund the to fuel the entire global economy for a full year. Now, here's the good news. In 2010, for the first time in history, global investments in renewable energy exceeded global investments in fossil fuel energy. This past week, it was announced that the biggest new source of electricity generation last year in the U.S. was wind. Australia announced electricity from wind is now cheaper than from coal and from gas. The cost of these alternatives is coming down rapidly. If we put a price on carbon, then we drive that shift dramatically. We speed it up. We accelerate it. It's happening. It's going to happen.
You do think so?
Oh, absolutely.
BC has a carbon tax, but there's a lot of pushback against it. One of the things BC did was say, look, we're putting on a carbon tax, but we're also going to give you lower taxes in other places or rebates.
I support. I mean, we're going to need new revenue for the long-term debt problem, but it's tough enough to get a carbon tax, so it should be revenue neutral. And not only BC, but also Quebec on the other side of the country. And Australia, the biggest coal exporter in the world, has just imposed both a CO2 tax and cap and trade. China has put cap and trade in two cities and five provinces as a pilot, which they declare will become a nationwide program in 2 years from now. I hope they follow through. India's put a coal tax on. South Korea's moving. Ireland, the EU's already there. I don't want to exaggerate the amount of this change that's undergoing, but here's why I'm so optimistic about it, Steve. The more solar and wind we use, the faster it comes down in price. The more coal and oil we use, the more it increases in price.
But we've just had a president who otherwise talked about climate change for the first time, also said we're going to open up more natural gas and oil drilling. He has to deal with the Keystone Pipeline. We've got Canada making all sorts of money. I mean, talk of peak oil, which you touched on here, talk of peak oil is sort of gone down for a while because new technologies, as the oil people said, new technologies are going to bring us more oil and gas for the near term, the near middle term.
Well, actually, conventional oil production on land masses peaked 30 years ago. And all of these new sources are significantly more expensive.
Well, they're going for them.
Well, they are going for them. There are a lot of weird factors underway with the gas fracking part of it. And they can't, you know, each new well needs 6 million gallons of water. The water is then poisoned. It's now causing all kind of problems in many places with pollution of the water tables. And the leaking methane and the flaring of methane is also a significant problem.
Well, again, it's the externalities question, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But why isn't that? I would think that communities would worry about the loss of their water and have the political power to stop it, but they don't.
And some do. And some do. You're seeing a huge revolt in places like New York State and even in Texas. There are counties in Texas that are on water restrictions for people in agriculture, opening up new fracking wells, which require millions of gallons of water to be diverted to them. That cannot continue. You know, a million cattle left Texas last year, and nobody expects them to return. 61% of our country was in drought. Much of it still is in drought. These fires in the West, 2 years ago, all but two of the 52 counties in Texas were on fire. This, and the governor there said, let's pray about it.
Exactly. Your good friends in Texas would say, look, we got gas instead of cattle, and so we'll turn up the air conditioners.
But increasingly, that's not what a lot of people are saying there.
Do you think they have political power to make changes?
Yeah, well? I think it's changing.
Gerrymandered districts and state legislatures?
The gerrymandering thing is a problem for sure because it insulates extreme partisans who are mainly concerned about primary challenges from their more extreme brethren. And that is one of the problems that needs to be addressed. But the main problem that needs to be addressed in our political system is the dominant role of big money. Citizens United needs to be overturned. In this book, I write about the history of the legal reasoning that led to Citizens United. It's a part of a massive philosophical struggle since the beginning of our country. Now, they can make anonymous contributions. And the dominance of television in the conversation of democracy has been largely responsible for the fact that these candidates and electeds running for re-election have to amass so much money to buy the TV ads that they spend the majority of every single day begging rich people, business lobbies, special interests for money. And that gives the whip hand to the special interests.
Well, has the web changed it? Has the net changed
it? It is beginning to.
So do you see a trend? Is the future then?
Yes.
An alternative.
Absolutely. And I'm optimistic about it. I mean, I see this as
I know you are. You tell me you're optimistic in here.
Well, you know, it's not Pollyannish. I mean, look, there's in history, there are lots of examples of where values-based, morality-driven mass movements change history. The abolition movement, the anti-apartheid movement, the anti-colonialism movement in the 1960s, the gay rights movement today. That was thought to have been impossible. We're seeing the anti-whaling movement. You can go right down the list. And when more people connect the dots and realize that we are just pointing a dagger at the hearts of the next generation by dumping all this pollution into the atmosphere like it's an open sewer, it's not far-fetched to see this rising tide of public opinion. There are already 2 million new NGOs on the internet around the world organized on this issue.
What's your thought, from Inconvenient Truth to today, what's your thought about our short term? The next 15 years, because it's accelerated faster than even what you were talking about. We're in a critical window here, and we are, you know, the president said something about climate change today, or, you know, this State of the Union.
Yeah, I was really encouraged by what he, oh, yeah, absolutely. I met with him. I don't talk about my meetings with him, but I don't have any doubt that he's serious about pursuing this.
To the point where he should take on those executive actions
if he doesn't get
the law?
He will. I think what you'll see, decoding what he said in the State of the Union, and he was great in the inaugural address also. You know, the EPA has the legal authority now, affirmed by the Supreme Court in 2007, to regulate global warming pollution. He's applied it to newly constructed power plants. Now, what's going to happen if the Congress doesn't act? And, of course, it won't because the coal and oil people control them, pull their strings. They say jump, and the majority in Congress says
people say he's a coal guy.
Well, I think that he has – I think that he's made a commitment to act on climate. And what he can do, and I think will do, is impose these restrictions on global warming pollution from existing power plants, and he may use an allocation formula that won't be called cap and trade, but it's likely to be similar to it in order to accomplish that goal.
What does the private sector do? Like, what are you doing with the people who are your clients? Given that, what's your strategy? And feel free to give us all investment advice.
Well, I'm always cautious in doing that. We're a concentrated fund at Generation, we look at everything through a sustainability lens. We don't have any investments in oil and gas. When we started out years ago, almost a decade ago, we did have some investments in BP because the guy running it then, Lord Brown, was pretty impressive, I thought, we all thought. But then they had that refinery fire in Texas and the pipeline accident in Alaska, and we took a real hard look at their safety culture, and we got out of it. Now, those who didn't, here's a perfect example of externalities that are not measured that lead to bad consequences in markets. The people who were still invested in BP at the time of the Deepwater Horizon accident looked at all these numbers on the Bloomberg screens. They got their quarterly earnings and projections and all the numbers that are included, but they didn't have data that showed them that the safety culture had gone to hell in BP and that they were not paying attention to protecting the environment. We were lucky to have picked that up because we have a lens that through which we look at that all the time, and we saw those accidents that I referred to, and we got the hell out of it. But how many times do investors have to take a bath because the metrics that are directly relevant to what's going to happen to the stock are not included in the way we report reality?
Reporting reality, that's Al Gore, his book, The Future. He was here just this past year talking about maybe how we can have some influence on reality.
And now, the sound of the day.
That's the sound of a pre-flight functional check of all of the alarms on a small business jet. Listener Brian, who's a pilot, sent that sound in. He says that they perform this check before every flight to ensure each alarm alert function works properly. It's like a fire drill for the aircraft.
I hope he wasn't, you know, when he was recording, he wasn't planning to just let go, put the plane. That's like driving and texting or something,
yeah,
isn't it?
No, he's not doing that. He's
recording and flying?
Yeah, that would be wrong.
No, you might be listening to a sound.
Oh, yeah. If you have some interesting sound of your life, we would like you to record 30 seconds and send it to us, along with the story behind it. Sound of the day in the subject line, weekday at KUOW.org. Pretty much my favorite part of the show, because listeners share with us, you are sharing with us, what the world sounds like to you, what your job, your family, your walks, your strange things that occur sound like. And then because of all these smart devices we have, you can just send it right to us and we can share it with everybody. It's a lot of fun. It's what makes public radio fun, if I may.
And public.
And that's why you should support it.
And we're asking you right now to call 206-543-9595. This is KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services. And this is the first day of our Spring Pledge Drive. I'm Marcy Silman with Steve Scher. And we're asking you, if you listen a weekday, if you learn from folks like Al Gore, if you're looking ahead for Nancy Pearl, who's the guest in the next hour, Jerry Kornfield going to talk about the week ahead in Olympia, if you just like listening to listener Brian's pre-flight function tests, we're asking you to make a pledge. Maybe you want to pledge at the $120 level. Easy to do. 206-543-9595 gets you downstairs. You hear all those people yakking away. They want to talk to you. Those are people who love KUOW.
I am pretty sure that most everybody who sends in a sound of the day is a member of KUOW because you're listening, you're enjoying. But if you have a sound and you want to send it to us, do. But with the sound, I have to make the segue. The sound we want to hear is the phone
ring,
ringing, because you have said, I've been listening a long time. I'm going to become a new member It feels better. Your sound of the day will be just that much brighter. 206-543-9595, 1-866-677-5869.
And you can pledge online. We had some computer issues which have been all ironed out. KUOW.org. Melissa from the Netherlands has renewed. She says, all members out of the country, please make a pledge. We hear from people in Japan. We hear from people in Greece. We hear from the Netherlands. Wherever you're listening, we're asking you to go online and make a pledge. Or maybe you live closer to home. Nelson's in Snohomish. He's a new member.
We are global. And you can listen any time of the day or night through the magic of the internet. You can download and listen. You can podcast. So if you're hearing this and it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Pledge online, KUOW.org. Always there for you. That's what makes the web important. That's what also makes the web something that we try to pay attention to. We try to get stories on the air. You're writing stories for the web.
Right. You may have noticed we have a new web page. If you go to KUOW.org, you can check that out. You can listen to the entire interview with Al Gore because it's archived there. You just go there and search Al Gore. We are here to make information easy to get to, easy to listen to, easy to digest and use in your daily life. And we come to you a couple times a year and say, please help pay for it by calling 1-866-677-5869. That's a toll-free number, 1-866-NPR, KUOW.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.